Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
Generic opening, take one.
Hello, this week we focus on those little bits of music that appear all over the radio dial. This is a signature tune of sorts. With it, you can make any programme you want in the comfort of a home studio.
And now, the greatest radio station on planet Earth. This is Radio...
Fill in name of radio station here.
Welcome to...
Fill in programme name here.
And now, the one and only, hosted by...
Fill in name of presenter here.
Okay, for the record, this is Media Network, Radio Netherlands' weekly communications magazine. I'm Jonathan Marks. And now that you're up to date, let's switch back to the main theme of today's show, jingles, how and why they're made.
Here comes the weatherman, lend him your ear.
He's the nicest weatherman we've ever met.
Their use goes back to the dawn of radio, when programme directors realised that a catchy melody helped the listener remember the call sign of the radio station. And in the case of commercial radio, it also helped the radio station prove to the advertiser that it was worth buying time on the radio station. In the mid-1980s, we ran a documentary on the early history of jingles, at a time when they were going out of fashion, at least the jingles involving singers. Now, as we approach 1995, they're certainly back in vogue. This is the story of two companies on either side of an ocean, but typical of the entire business of specialised music making for radio.
There's a friend I know called Radio, and it means a lot to me. With funny bits and the hardest hits, it keeps me company. But there's such a maze of W's and K's, and every city's got a kiss.
Twenty years ago, in 1974, Jonathan Wolfert formed a company with his wife, Mary Lynn, in Dallas, Texas. And so Jonathan and Mary Lynn were shortened to JAM. So how have jingles changed over those two decades?
Right now, they're still very much in vogue on the CHR stations, which are the top 40 stations, we used to call them, the adult contemporary stations, which takes in a wide range. The term adult contemporary is everything from very soft, light rock to almost CHR. And those formats, as well as country, seem to be using quite a lot of jingles. What has changed is the use of jingles is a little more thought out. Several decades ago, stations would have loads of jingles available for the disc jockeys to play at their discretion when and if they wanted to, whereas now it's more of a formatted thing. At such and such a time, you play this jingle. At such and such a time, you do the weather with this jingle. You know, it's a little more controlled. It's a little less spontaneous. In some formats, that means fewer jingles, because if they're only playing them at certain times of the clock, they may not need as many as somebody who's playing one after every single record. But in general, I'd say jingles are every bit as much in style as they ever were.
How would you describe a station jingle that's so memorable that listeners can recall it for years? We just like to say it's magic. Listen.
WMGK.
It's a hard sell. Dallas, Texas has traditionally been the home for jingle production, serving the tens of thousands of stations in the USA and later many other countries around the world. And with so many radio stations on the planet, surely companies like JAM must have to turn out jingles rather like cars on a production line.
Well, we prefer not to think of it as a factory, because it's a little more of a creative product than that. But the difference being that it's not a manufactured product that you can just go to a machine and churn out and have the finished product fall to the bottom and crate.
And in the early days, some of the most important jingles on a radio station were simply to remind the listener which station he or she was tuned to. That didn't leave much room for creativity, bearing in mind that stations in the United States were given a 3- or 4-letter call sign. With a few historical exceptions, call signs west of the Mississippi River began with the letter K. Those east began with the letter W. Nowadays, many stations aren't so much interested in their legal call sign.
A lot of stations now have names for their stations that are not just those government-issued 4 letters. In fact, most stations now seem to have a little combination of letters and numbers. For example, you'll hear a station calling itself, you know, Mix 107.3, and their real call letters may be WRQX. That's an example from Washington, D.C.
Mix 107.3 is WRQX.
You know, legally they are WRQX, and once an hour they say that very quickly, but as far as the listeners are concerned, they want them to know that it's Mix 107.9. So we have that to work with in addition to just letters. And since there are so many different combinations now of letters, numbers, phrases, and call letters, there is quite a bit of a variety in what we have to do.
Suppose you just got the license to start a new radio station in your community, and you decided you needed some jingles to make it sound professional. You have 2 choices, depending on how much money you have to spend. Originality has its price.
Initially, a jingle package will start off as a custom package for someone. If a station wants us to create something brand new just for them, made to their specifications, we'll do a custom package, which means we write it from scratch, bring in the musicians and the singers, and do it specifically to their specifications.
Jam presents It's All For You.
BBC Radio 2.
What kind of musical image package do you create for a station that plays a mix of music from the 60s and 70s, melodic hits from the 80s and 90s, and even an occasional classic from the 50s? That was the challenge from Radio 2, the BBC's national adult contemporary network. First, Jam designed a distinctive melody for Radio 2's slogan, It's All For You. Then we developed jingles in a variety of styles and tempos. The cuts feature male and female solo voices to make the message more personal. You'll hear transitions, personality identifiers, basic logos, and more. It's All For You. Just one more reason why Jam is recognized worldwide as the number one choice for jingles.
In most cases, that customized package is then made available to radio stations in other markets. For jingle collectors, it's not unusual to hear a public broadcast like that really pushing his jingle package like it was a bottle of Coca-Cola. And that explains why, as you travel round, you find people singing different words to the same little pieces of music. That's the original from the UK, which caught on in a few other markets.
BBC.
With some adaption, it moved over here to Holland.
In that case, really the only input that's required from the client is what words do you want to replace the original words with. And sometimes we'll help them do that, sometimes they do it themselves. In the case of the custom, though, where you're doing it for the very first time, we do spend a lot of time talking with the station to find out what kind of music they play, how energetic is the station, what do they want the jingles to accomplish, what do they want them to sound like, how many do they need, what kind of vocal sound do they like, a big, thick, full choir, or maybe just solos. You know, there's so many questions to ask. And you can pretty much, after asking some of these questions, find out what they are hearing in their heads, and then we just use our best efforts to go make that.
You talk about choirs and orchestras. We're now in the age of digital sampling. Do you use that as well?
We use that when we are trying to make a package that's going to go on a station that's playing a lot of contemporary music and they want the jingles to sound that way. We don't use it as a shortcut. You know, some studios say, well, why should you hire a string section when you can get it out of this keyboard over here? Well, the answer is that the string section is better. You know, human beings can do things that the machines can't. It is less expensive in terms of people you have to pay, but it is much more time-consuming because you have to teach the machine everything you want it to do. Every drum beat, every bass note, and every string line has to be programmed into the thing, and all it will do is spit it back out again. Whereas if you are dealing with live musicians, not only will they do what you tell them, but they will contribute to the process and add their own ideas.
The singers in Dallas also make jingles in French for the Canadian market, as well as Spanish for Latin America. Meanwhile, across the Atlantic Ocean, Holland has built up quite a reputation for jingle production, partly because singers here often sing in foreign languages with ease. Bart van Koch runs the jingle company Top Format. From a beautiful converted house not far from the centre of Haarlem, just west of Amsterdam, they produce competitive jingles for the European market. At least, that's what the brochures claim. Top Format and Jam in Dallas have a link. So what is it?
Actually, we're doing a part of what Jam is doing. They do the music, we do the singing, which means that we do adaptions of their jingle tracks.
So they send you the music?
Well, they first send us the original American demos, the examples of what they did. We send them to our clients so they can make a choice from, let's say, 12 or 13 jingle packages in their format. Once they have chosen one, we go into the studio and do all singing for them.
And is there a major market for American music? I mean, do the people see it as American music?
Initially, people saw it as American music. Now they're used to the jingles in general. They more see it as a European adaptation of the American jingles. But the audience don't realize that it is coming from the United States. They just accept it as being German or Dutch or whatever language. Some clients prefer to have their own package, a custom-made package for their station because they have a specific format. So what we do in those cases is go to the United States, produce the music tracks there, come back, sing it over here, and supply the client with a master tape.
But what about countries where you don't speak the language, for example, Icelandic or Czech?
What we do then is add a few singers from the country where we have to sing for to our own singers. So we take three or four Dutch singers that are very used to sing all these weird harmonies and difficult intervals, and that are acting like a sort of parrot, you know. They just look at the foreign singer that's coming to our studio and say, okay, you pronounce it that way, I don't care what I'm saying, but I'll try to do the same. Sometimes it's very complex, and when it's the first time we have to sing it, it takes about 20 and sometimes 30 minutes if it's a hard language to sing, and the jingle is pretty complex. Once you're used to a certain jingle package because you have done it a few times for different countries, it takes about 10 or 12 minutes. Most singers do this for a living, which is quite a hard job these days because there are so many singers in the market, especially in jingles. There are, I think, about 15 or 16 people in Holland that are qualified enough to do this because they read scores, they read well, they're fast, they know how to tune, know how to blend with each other, which is very important when you're doing jingles. But they're making a living out of it. Not only jingles, of course, but they have a reasonable income.
So they do things like commercials as well?
They do commercials, they do CD projects, background vocals on stage. The nice thing about jingles is that it's very, very good for their routine and their experience. They like to do it because it's so, you have to be so concentrated when you do the job that they learn every time.
German or Luxembourgish, it doesn't really matter. Europe's been through the same wave as North America, where sung jingles were out of fashion and so-called sweepers with music and deep voices with slogans were in. In the last few years, sung jingles have re-emerged, especially as disc jockeys have started to say less in between the records. Bart van Gogh says that parts of this continent are difficult to serve.
Southern Europe, I would say. Not only because of the language, but also because of the economy in these countries. I mean, jingles are pretty expensive. You have to get 5 or 7 singers into one studio for a whole day just singing little pieces of music for one radio station. You have to pay the studio facilities. You have to pay the copyrights on the music tracks. I mean, working the way we work is still cheaper than having all orchestra playing for just one station. But it's for those markets, it's pretty expensive.
We're talking about thousands of dollars.
You're talking about for a local station about an average of $400 per jingle. And they go with a minimum of 10 jingles, so that's $4,000 just to have your name sung.
Are there sometimes impossible requests where people want things sung that you can't sing?
Some people tend to create lyrics that absolutely won't fit in any jingle because the jingle is about 4 seconds long, and they come up with a lyric, and when you speak it rather fast, it also already takes about 8 seconds to speak it. So it's, you know, there was this famous radio station in Belgium. It was in 83, and they were called the University Broadcasting Organization, and they wanted to have their jingle sung on a original package that was created for WJK or something with just a 5-6 syllables. So we had to fit all these words into these jingles. It worked out, but it didn't sound quite good.
It wasn't your best package.
It wasn't our best package. And we told them already. We said, well, we can do this, but it will sound strange. And they said, well, as long as it's sung, it's fine.
In your opinion, which is the market then that's most active in terms of developing the jingles, not just taking other people's ideas and changing the lyrics, but actually developing the market?
Holland and Belgium. I mean, I'm talking about the continent of Europe, plus Italy. But in Italy, people tend to create their own stuff. As soon as there's somebody with a synthesizer around the corner, they will just connect a dead tape recorder and create new jingles. But that's, to our opinion, not the way it works. It's like, well, okay, there's music and there's somebody talking or singing over it. Creating jingles is a different ballgame. But I think Germany and Holland have a lot of creative program directors on the radio stations that want to have real creative new material. A big station here in Holland, Veronica, they refuse to buy syndicated or existing jingle packages. They want to have everything composed especially for them.
Because they have a built-in tune that goes back to their days when they were on an offshore radio station.
Also, and they have their specific wishes, like, well, this jingle has to go so and so and so, and we want to have this and this song, and then that happened, and these effects, and so on. So you have to create something new for them. In general, the singers come in, the music tracks are on a multi-track tape, so there are, let's say, 2 or 4 tracks of music, and there's a lot of space on the other tracks to put the vocals on. So the singers have their lyrics that they have to sing, they have the vocal charts, all the notes that they have to sing on these jingles, and they have the original example, which will always play to get into the right atmosphere. And with foreign sessions, like German or French or Danish or Norwegian, we always have the client in the studio to correct us as far as the phonetics are concerned. And then we just start with jingle one and try to have 20 or 25 jingles done by the end of the day.
The best in oldies.
Jonathan Wolfert says it's only certain kinds of people that get into this type of work.
It's a very specialized business, so much so that there's only a handful of companies that do it to any recognizable scale. I got into it because I've always been interested in it. I think of myself as a radio production person at heart who happens to know music as well. I had always been fascinated by the jingles that the stations used to identify themselves and wondered where they got them, and was especially fascinated by hearing a package on one station and then hearing the same thing in another city but with the words a little different. And, well, that's clever, but who are those people? And it's sort of like if you were, say, a fan of the Beatles and every city you went to, you heard their songs with different words in them. And you'd start to wonder, wait a minute, how'd they do that? So, although I was prepared to pursue a radio career as a disc jockey or a production person or whatever, what I really wanted to do was work at one of these jingle companies, and I was fortunately able to do that. I got a job at one of the big companies in Dallas in the early 70s, and so I moved from New York, which is my home, to Dallas, and I worked in the business for 3 or 4 years. And then, at that point, I had so many of my own ideas that I wanted to try out, we just decided to go out on our own and start our own company.
So how do you keep it fresh after 20 years?
Well, to some degree, it stays fresh because what people ask for continuously changes. In every package, I try to introduce something new, a new singer, a new sound, a new idea, but not just throw out the entire history of jingles and start all over again, because we've tried that a few times and it's just too radical a change and they don't know how to deal with it.
Are there people who collect jingles?
Yeah, you're speaking to one of them. I started, while I was still in school, and one of my hobbies was collecting jingles, taping them at first off the air, and then I discovered there were other collectors like myself, and we traded tapes quite often, and sometimes I'd get copies from the radio stations and so forth, which is completely illegal, but that doesn't bother you at that age. And there still are. For some reason, we hear a lot more from the jingle collectors in Europe than America. There are some, but the hobby seems to have moved to Europe. We get a lot of letters from England and Holland and some of the other countries, just from people saying they like jingles and could we send them a cassette tape or something. And
also because of the growth of local radio, I guess.
Yeah, that probably has a lot to do with it, because they're probably exposed now to more jingles than say 10 years ago.
Red hot. One.
The C Morning Zoo. Red hot C100.
Two.
Hot.
But what about piracy with all these demo compact discs and cassettes around, and some countries in southern and eastern Europe that have less than watertight rules regarding copyright? Surely there's a temptation to lend a package and put it on the air. Bart van Gogh of Top Format isn't too concerned.
Isn't that how we all started? I mean, it happens. You know, when you drive throughout Europe and you turn on the radio, you sometimes hear these stations where you think, I know that, but I didn't sing it for this station. I didn't make this for this station. And it turns out that they took it from our demo, our presentation, and exactly what you told me. They cut out the name of the station and put something in instead. It happens. But the big ones won't do it. The big stations won't go that far, but there's nothing you can do about it. I mean, you can sue them, but it's not worth it.
Is there a lot of competition then from other jingle manufacturers?
There are, I think in this country, in Holland, there are about 4 serious companies. The competition gets tougher. There are more people on the market, also from the United States. There are about 3 companies from the United States, and one does it all himself. I mean, it's only custom production. There are also a lot of radio stations, so it's not bothering us. I was a jingle freak myself when I was still at school. I was, listening to the radio not only for the music, but as soon as there was a record playing that I already knew, I switched to another station to hear if there was something interesting going on, like commercials or jingles. And I started to create my own little jingles for a pirate station that I had in the 70s and 80s. And I was one of them who was stealing all the WABC and jingles and added them till I got this opportunity to start this job at this company.
There's, in fact, quite a lot of societies, at least judging from the mail that we get to Radio Netherlands, from people who indeed do nothing but collect jingle packages and swap them. I mean, do you come into contact with those people?
Yeah, we sometimes get calls from people that collect jingles and they want to have copies of original demos from the United States. And it depends on how serious these people are. If there's any chance that some guy or girl has a station somewhere and will put these jingles on air, we will refuse to cooperate. But if it's a real collector who's serious and who knows a lot about the jingle business, we'll help them with whatever they want.
Voice of America shortwave service, which a lot of people are familiar with, uses news opens and sounders and things which we've created, and they use that on all their language services all around the world. They also have another service now called VOA Europe, which is more like a typical American station. It originates in Washington and is sent by satellite to Europe, at where it is picked up by affiliate stations and cable systems and what have you. And since they are in that instance trying to sound as much as possible like an American contemporary station, they have our jingles on there, and they have affiliates in many different countries, including some countries that we never thought we'd ever be able to have jingles on, but the world is changing so quickly now. I'm especially proud of the jingles we've made through the years for the BBC, for their national Radio 1 and 2. I think they consistently get some of our best work for whatever reason. The jingles that we made in the 1970s for WABC in New York and WLS in Chicago, which are two very big, powerful stations, have always been very good.
One time you put them all together to make the so-called jam song, am I correct?
Well, the jam song, we didn't really physically glue them together. We created something called the Jam Song, which was just a promotional 5 or 6 minute song we made and sent out to all the radio stations. And we just tried to tell a little story about what it was we did for a living and sing the call letters of a lot of the people we did it for. The interesting thing about that was that we tried to, when we sang the name of each station in that song, sing it to the correct melody and with the correct singers that would reflect what was on that station, at least at that time. So as that's why it took us 3 weeks to record the thing, because it was so complicated.
Final question, because at the end of that song you go out into outer space and I hear a bit of shortwave, or am I got it wrong?
Well, you're obviously very sensitive to what shortwave sounds like, and I must reveal that,
you know, as a
radio fan, you know, I've been a shortwave DXer and listener since I was 10 years old. So at the very end of that song, where we wanted to get the idea that jam jingles were coming from other galaxies and stuff, I did actually bring in my shortwave and record some
telemetry and static and stuff
to mix in there. So that is, in fact, my shortwave you're hearing.
So now we know. And my thanks to Jonathan Wolfert and Bart van Gogh
for sharing the secrets of jingles.
Right now, some last chances.
Reports from two independent sources say that the Austrian radio, ORF,
will switch off all its domestic medium wave services by this coming Sunday, January the 1st. The ORF has complete coverage of the country on FM and doesn't see the need to maintain high-power medium wave senders. There are two 600-kilowatt transmitters at Biesenberg on the outskirts of Vienna. 585 kilohertz operates round the clock, 1476 kilohertz from 19 to 22 hours UTC.
There's also
a 25-kilowatt transmitter at Lauterach on 1026 kilohertz. That's currently on the air round the clock, which too will be leaving the airwaves in a few days' time. Call Israel announced cutbacks to its foreign language external services this past week. There have been regular announcements that the whole future of Israel's shortwave service is in the balance, but each time there was a last-minute reprieve. However, now Amnon Nadev, director of Call Israel, has decided that the 1400 and 2230 UTC broadcasts in English will stop as from Sunday. On the other hand, Konstantin Kufi, calling from Kiev, reports that the Ukraine has reactivated its medium-wave transmitters on both 972 and 1431 kHz, carrying the second and third programmes of Ukrainian radio, respectively.
Media Network. Copyright 1995.
Like the sound of that, we'll use it next week.
I've been doing some listening between 3 and 30 megawatts. Some people get static. Some people get far-off countries. I just get a headache.
Serving the universe from Flevo, Radio Netherlands, with relays in Russia, Bonaire, and Madagascar. Any questions?
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.